Blog Talk Radio.
There are some weeks where you got it, and there's some weeks when you don't. And this might be the week where I finally lay the smack down on Jose. Oh, will it or will it not?
In your dreams, pal.
All right, Real Sports Talk Radio on the air. How are you, Jose?
Hey, Randy, what's going on?
So, Jose, we're live here, Real Sports Talk Radio. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm good, dude. How's everything going by you?
It's going. You know what it is? It's going. We are in the midst of the... We're now on the tail end of Thanksgiving. The Thanksgiving weekend, we're finally sort of done with it. Was not impressed with the Thanksgiving weekend.
Wow, what happened?
It was one of those things where it was just, you know, it was one of those weird weekends for business and all the shopping. Like, I think this is one of the years I've seen the most sales for, like, Black Friday. You know, people are going crazy. By the way, Randy Zillia, Jose Padilla, 760-283-0846. If you want to talk to Mr. Padilla and Mr. Zillia, like just like, you know, Men in Black, Mr. Smith, Mr. Jones. With that being said, Real Sports Talk Radio brought to you by Back Sports Page. You can find us at Back Sports Page on Twitter or at AngryJose15, at RZilliaBSP. And, of course, find us on our Facebook page at Real Sports Talk Radio, where Jose will never, ever give me the credit where I deserve. And when I say I'm going to lay the smack down on you, I mean, this is where I just want to know why I can't just get a little bit of credit. I know it's hard for you. You have to be right 365, 24/7. I know. You can't just let me have my 5 minutes in the sun, can you?
Listen, you know me. When you talk to me and when you say stuff to me, you better word it right and you better have your facts straight. Now, I was willing to give you the love, and I gave you the love, but I have to correct you when you start telling me things that you're the first one to go 6-0, when that was an obvious mistake on your part. And I let it be known to the great and wonderful fans that we have that I had already done it a couple of weeks ago. So all that being said, you got your credit. Shut up.
Okay. Well, first off, I'm laughing because you follow up with a great comment by saying, "Be grateful now. Shut up." That's it. And it's like, you know, it's like, okay. You know, it's funny you say that. You're like, no, I'm gonna give you all the credit in the world. Here's your credit. Now shut up. Okay.
Yeah.
Great talk. It's one of those things. I'm feeling the love. Right now, there's a therapist going. I think there's some healing going on between the two. Jose almost gave a compliment, and Randy almost took it. So there's some healing going on right now.
I will give you a compliment in this sense, I have to say I'm very proud of you because I think for the first time in God knows how long you actually watched a college football game yesterday. If I'm not correct,
I watch some college football. Sometimes I'll leave it on in the background, but it's a little different for me because again I'm not a diehard college football guy where I watch everything. You know, I don't know quarterback names. I know the teams. I follow the top 25, which, by the way, Seth came at 6:30 to talk some college football with us. We're gonna go over the top 25 in a few minutes.
Okay.
With all the changes, go over all that. But what I'm saying to you is, it's hard for when it comes to college football. I'm a casual fan, very, 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 very casual fan. When it comes to the pros, it's because I'm usually around those guys, so it's easier for me to follow it. Does that make sense?
Well, what are pros other than people that used to be amateurs?
I understand. I know.
I will say this. It helps to follow, and I think it would be beneficial for you to at least pay more, give it a more than just a casual look, because it would prepare you in dealing with these guys, because what are they other than guys that just played in college before they got to the pros in any sport. If you more you know about them, the more you will be able to understand how they do and what they do. That's always been my take. So that's why I always feel like, even though you're the NBA guy, since I watch a lot more college basketball, college football too, I have a better sense of how a guy's going to turn out when he finally does make it to the pros.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that you do that. You know, it is one of those. Again, it's hard. Also, because remember, I grew up. You didn't grow up in this area. I grew up in this area, and we're in the area right now. There's a guy from Wisconsin going, "Where the hell is he talking about?" I grew up here in northern New Jersey, where in New York, the New York sports atmosphere doesn't have really, besides Rutgers, and Rutgers was bad for so long, it's still hard to give them the credit. You know what I mean? It's still the name recognition is still not there for Rutgers. So,
well, I grew up in New York. I mean, so believe me, I've been here as long as you have. Believe me, I've been around. I'm familiar with the scene. You know, the thing is that people who grew up in this area think of Rutgers. We have other programs too. I mean, unfortunately, they're mostly upstate, but we have Syracuse has been a big time program in both, especially now in basketball, but trying to find their way back again in football. But you know, a meteoric rise, so to speak. But that's neither here nor there. I am proud of you, though, that you did take the time to watch a particular game yesterday because it is a big deal.
I watched two. I actually watched two games. I watched the Clemson. I actually, and you're going to find this absolutely amazing, I actually found the South Carolina Clemson game more exciting than the USC Notre Dame game.
And I'll tell you why you found it more exciting. I'll tell you exactly why. Because what you saw in that game was a game where the offenses were still going strong, but there was still a semblance of somewhat solid defense. As opposed to Notre Dame, what you saw was basically a team playing with their backup quarterback, giving a scare to Notre Dame, but never really being able to get over the top.
You know what I felt with watching Notre Dame yesterday? And right now we're still on track, so I'm okay. My attitude has been watching that football game, and I said this to the people who I was watching the game with, because I was over at a restaurant establishment in the area. We were sitting there watching, and the thing that I really felt was, for a team that held on to the ball and had as much time of the possession, you really think that Notre Dame would have put more points on the board, and he didn't. And that was, to me, the shocking part of the whole entire situation. I always like Greeny and Golic, and actually, because the game was on ABC and ESPN networks, they actually focused in. I don't know if you saw it. They focused in on Golic a couple of times. You actually saw him there.
No, I honestly did not notice him.
They showed him on there once or twice, and I'm sitting there saying the first two things I thought was, man, it must be great to work at the network, so even when you're not on the air, you're sort of on the air. And the other part that I found really interesting about the game, and this is where I found it difficult, but it was really interesting, was the simple fact of Notre Dame is the equivalent to the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Yankees. You either like them or you don't like them. There's no in the middle. There's no like baseball fans which they're saying, yeah, I sort of like the Yankees. Or there's no football fans like, I sort of like the Dallas Cowboys. There's Notre Dame haters and there's people who love Notre Dame. There's nothing in the middle.
I definitely agree with you on that aspect. I will say this. I am not a Notre Dame fan by any sense of the imagination. I am not. I don't hate them, though. But I do agree with the sentiment. What I hate are the people who blindly will tell you how great they are, even though they haven't been good for quite some time. And then now, because they were able to basically skate through their schedule this year, telling you how, you see, this is what Notre Dame is. I'm going to tell you something that I've told a lot of people, and a lot of people agree with me with this statement. And this is just the fact of the matter. And we all knew it, too. And it goes for any year with Notre Dame. If they're undefeated with the way the format is right now, they will make it to the championship game. They will somehow find a way, because there's still a lot of people who are involved in the process that are still stuck in this barbaric mind frame that Notre Dame is playing like they were playing in the 1950s and 30s and 40s and were great teams, when in actuality, they've been a ho-hum program for quite a while now.
Well, we're going to come back to this because we have to jump into the NFL for a quick. Let's get everybody updated with what's been going on. We have a game. We have a couple of games in progress. For those who don't realize that we are on earlier this week, 6 o'clock, 6 to 7:30. Thank you, Jose, for freeing up. I know I had to go through your lawyers and go through your contract people. Just so we can talk to you. And that's just to say hello. It's not
it
even
happened.
Just 760-283-0846. I hate you. San Diego is right now in a dogfight with Baltimore. They're up 10-3. The Niners just scored again. Frank Gore made a nice little dive into the end zone. They're up 21-14 on the New Orleans Saints. That is a pick six game for Jose and I. Arizona leading St. Louis 17-14. Now the rest are finals. Chicago over Minnesota 28-10. Cincinnati destroying Oakland. Carson Palmer did not return to Cincinnati with cheers of any sorts. 34-10 Cincy over Oakland. The shocker of the day, the Cleveland Browns. They've been in every game, with the exception of the Giant game. Cleveland's really been in every game this year. And they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 20-14, a little bit of a letdown game.
We'll get back to that in a second, though.
We both picked Indy in our pick six, another pick six game. Indy over Buffalo 20-13. The Broncos didn't have their way with Kansas City as much as we thought they would be. Denver went 17-9, and Miami outlasted Seattle 24-21. Atlanta beats Tampa Bay, I think would be the game of the day, 24-23. And Jacksonville gets their second victory of the season as they defeat the Tennessee Titans 24-19. Thanksgiving Day game recap really quick. Houston over Detroit 34-31 in a real controversial game. In a game that either is going to hurt the Giants or help the Giants, the Redskins defeat the Cowboys 38-31. RG3 looked phenomenal at times. You and I are going to have to jump into RG3 in this little window that we have for NFL. New England Patriots had a scrimmage on Thanksgiving against some guys wearing green jerseys. And they won 49-19. And tonight the Giants host the Green Bay Packers and Philly host Carolina tomorrow night at 8:30 on ESPN. Okay, real quick, before we jump back into the Pittsburgh game, I got to bring up this topic about RG3 and the Washington-Dallas game from Thanksgiving.
Are you finally ready to join me in what I've been saying all year about RG3?
Almost, because he was electric at a lot of points during that game. When Dallas was making their run in the fourth quarter, it seemed like, with the exception of that last field goal, RG3 had a real tough time in the fourth quarter. I think he's talented.
He was really tired from putting up 35 points in the first three quarters.
Right, but I'm saying as soon as the pressure was on for them to get down the field, there were a lot of penalties against the Cowboys defense, a lot of penalties in that fourth quarter that got them down to the field goal range. He had a hard time. Again, I'm not discounting anything he did for the first three quarters. I'm saying in that fourth quarter, when it started getting tight, it became a little difficult. But
let's be fair, though. Great. Let's be fair. In the fourth quarter,
I'm being fair.
All right, but let's be fair. Going into the fourth quarter, it was 28-13. All right. To start the fourth quarter, he threw that pass and now it's Paul to make it 35-13. At that point, the game is over. You know what? At that point, it's not on him anymore. It's the Washington defense that kind of really, crap the bed there, so to speak.
I'm saying if he can get the team down the field to control the clock a little bit and slow down Dallas's momentum, instead it was shaky. It became, like I said, shaky at best. And they won the game. At the end of the day, they won the game. And like I said, this is, as Giant fans, like you and I are Giant fans, I think this game really hurt Dallas. This might have put the nail in the coffin for Dallas, but now you got to worry about the Redskins. And that, like someone said to me, like the people who were watching the game with, they looked at me like, "Well, who are you rooting for?" It's almost like a pick your poison. I said, "If anything, I'd be happy if they can knock out the Cowboys." because if they can knock out the Cowboys, it's you know, you and I both said this was going to be a loss on Thanksgiving. You and I went through the schedule last week, and we both said this was going to be a loss.
Yeah, and I'll say this right now. I'm not worried about the Redskins yet because we already got a win over them at this point to start the year. I'll say this. I won't worry about the Redskins unless the Redskins win that game next week at FedEx on Monday night. If they win that game, then it's something to be concerned with, especially if the Giants lose tonight. If the Giants win tonight, it's not such a big deal if they lose next week. You know, you do want to win, obviously, but let's see what happens first. We got to see what goes on these next couple, you know, the next couple of games for the Giants. So if they win tonight, it almost makes next week's game more like a house money game, so to speak.
I got you. Now, real quick, you wanted to jump into a Cleveland-Pittsburgh game. For a team like Pittsburgh, who's just decimated with injuries right now.
And that's the only reason why they lost. I mean, when you got your third-string quarterback out there, you know, they scored one touchdown on defense. I mean, so really, they really didn't have much of an easy time moving the ball today. So what can you do?
No, I agree. And I think we are now at a point, I think you can agree with me on this, that the NFL teams now know who they are and where they are. I think we know who the good teams are. I think we're at a point now where the Dallas Cowboys don't bank on them to play any type of consistency.
No, they're consistently average, so.
Yeah, they're consistently average. They're an overrated team. And we're trying to figure out what they're doing. By the way, San Fran just scored again 27-14. Interception by Drew Brees. Yeah, into a touchdown. Pick six. With that being said, right now, like I said, in the NFL, you know who's your good teams and your bad teams. Look, we break down the Steelers-Browns game. It comes down to left, you just hit. They're beat up. They voted Flacco Burris this past week for a tryout.
Yeah, I know. I think he played in this game, did he not?
Yeah, he did. He did play in this game. It's interesting. It's interesting to see where everything is, where all the NFL teams are lining up. I do think the Giants are the best team in the NFC East. But the team that really surprised me in a negative way was the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles, I just don't know. I don't think Andy Reid has an answer for what's going on. I think their offensive line is letting Vic get killed. I don't think they're letting, you know.
What you have there is an issue where the Eagles can't run the ball with any consistency. They don't want to run the ball with any consistency, and that's why their quarterbacks get hurt.
Yeah. No, I agree. And LeSean McCoy now is going to be out this week. Vic's going to be out this week. It's going to be a point where you say, okay, what's the future here? You know, do you keep Andy Reid? Now, if you're the owners of the Philadelphia Eagles, the general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles, at the end of the season, are you going to say, for what you've done for us in the past, we're going to give you another shot? Or do you say...
No, he's gone. I believe he's gone. I think this year was a... you got to do much better than last year. I think this year was a... you need to compete for a Super Bowl. It has not happened. They spent a lot of money last year to bring in a lot of high-priced players. And it hasn't come through. And I think the only reason why he's not gone right now is because basically the season's already up in smoke. Why even go through the whole hassle of bringing in another coaching there to try to erect something that can't be erected anymore? So he'll be gone by the end of the year. Chip Kelly from Oregon will probably take over, and we'll see what happens from there.
By the way, I'm looking at the games for next week. You want to talk about a plethora of good games. And I wanted to use that word just for you. I just want to let you know. A plethora.
I like it.
You have your Thursday night game is a game I don't think I want to miss. It's New Orleans at Atlanta.
It's more name now than anything else.
Well, at this point, I'm not going to start going over the whole entire schedule. I'm just pointing out the games that are of intrigue. Minnesota, Green Bay, Indy, Detroit, Tampa Bay at Denver. That's a game I definitely want to keep my eye on. Cincinnati at San Diego is going to be interesting. Pittsburgh at Baltimore again. And then the Sunday night game is a game that's is meaningless. It's Philadelphia at Dallas. And then that Monday night game, it's just the first time, I think, all season where the Sunday night game has little to no value, and the Monday night game has more value than the Sunday night game.
Well, I think we're in the flex. I think we're in the flex period right now, so I think we might, that game might get flexed out. I mean, unless they just
Giant
can't
game?
Find anything to replace. No, the Philadelphia-Dallas game.
I think if they're smart, they're not going to put the Pittsburgh Baltimore game because they had that game 2 weeks ago, or last week, I mean.
Yeah. Plus,
so
we don't even know if Roethlisberger will be back, so.
Maybe, you know, maybe, just maybe, they're obviously not going to change out the Thursday night game. So I have a strange feeling that if they decide to flex it out, they're going to move the Tampa Bay-Denver game down.
Oh, why not? I mean,
I think,
Denver's been on TV all season on this area. I mean, I think I've seen more Denver games than Giant games.
are you going to move Cincinnati and San Diego? San Diego's not worth moving up.
That's the problem.
Well, then it has to, and I hate to say it, then you're moving Minnesota and Green Bay from a 1 o'clock start to a 8:20 start.
Well, let me take a look. And I'm not doubting your prowess here on this.
You're not moving. Listen, okay. We have to get back to the college football, and I promise you we're going to do it. But we have to finish this argument because of.
If
we're in flex time, again, you're not switching out to Thursday night game, which is probably the second best game of the week.
I don't think you can switch that game anyway. I don't think that game can
right,
be switched.
You can't switch that game out. You're not putting Jacksonville versus Buffalo there. You're not putting Seattle or Chicago there. San Francisco, St. Louis, you're not putting that game there. You're not putting New England and Miami there. You're not putting Arizona and the Jets there. I don't think you can really put the Colts in the Lions there.
I think you could put them there because, you know, people want to see Andrew Luck.
I understand
so
they want to see Andrew Luck, but at the same time, you cannot put the Lions with the way they play, you know, with their record. I'm saying this is the time of season you want to see potential playoff teams fighting on national television.
Well,
Indianapolis
is going making a run right now.
I understand, but Detroit isn't. And listen, remember how we just said you are what your record says you are.
Yes,
they're
I understand that. But Detroit also has some cachet, too. The game also has to bring some cachet. Detroit brings cachet to the mix. So
I can see that game. I hate to say it. I think you either move Minnesota to Green Bay, or you suck it up and you put Denver in Tampa. I have no problem with that either.
I have no problem with that either. But there's no way you're gonna put him in. I can understand why if you go with my argument about cachet, I can kind of see the point of moving Green Bay and Minnesota, but I just don't know.
I'm gonna tell you the last Sunday night game Denver had. They had it in week 8 against New Orleans when they won 34-14. That was the last time. So that was about 6 weeks ago.
I can tell you right now, too, though, I think the Denver game next week is probably going to be the game of the week, so that game won't be able to be moved anyway.
Oh, sorry, which one was it? I'm sorry?
The Denver-Tampa Bay game. I don't think that game will be able to get moved anyway because that's probably going to be Fox's game of the week. So you really probably don't even have that Denver game to move. So most likely it's probably going to be Indianapolis-Detroit.
This is sound crazy, but don't get mad at me for saying it. But it might be Cincinnati and San Diego. Unless you move New England to Miami because you want to show New England, because New England hasn't had many Sunday nights this year.
You could. I mean, Miami's been competitive this year, so it's not off the realm of possibilities.
And then if you just look down to, you know, the week 14, they have Detroit and Green Bay, which is the Sunday night game, and they can just as easily move New Orleans. Well, yeah, you know what? They can actually move. No, they wouldn't move the Giants in New Orleans. They wouldn't have the Giants have two late games in a row. They wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Giants schedules, brutal.
It's a brutal schedule. It's brutal.
They have the worst schedule in the worst remaining schedule left of all football.
Oh, without saying. I mean, it's rough. There's not an easy team on there, you know. Like, again, this is what – it always seems to work out that way, too. We see New England with first-place schedules that don't – and they've never had a brutal schedule like this. I find it comical. I really do find it comical.
All right. Well, we'll continuously we'll come. Maybe we'll get back to this during the last segment of the show. But let's jump back to the college football. Did I just say that?
I'm so proud of you right now.
It's like a dad watching his son grow up. I'm never gonna say that again. Anyways,
yeah.
With that being said, I hate you. And besides that,
go on, Fredline. Go on.
Are you sure you're done laughing at me? You sure?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Very, very, very good. Okay. So, where do we want to go first? Do you want to go AP Top 25 or USA Today?
We really shouldn't even hit AP because AP doesn't mean anything at this point. The only thing that really matters is the BCS ranking. That's the ranking that matters. So let's take a look at that.
The fan rankings of ESPN. I like how they made that like a very, very, very important thing. So, okay. So what about the BCS candidates? So I guess you're right. I guess maybe we should do the I mean, it sound like all reluctant. Like, fine, we'll do the BCS standing.
It's the one that matters,
come on,
you know.
Jose.
The one that matters. So, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you want us to do 25-1, or do you want us to do 1-25?
We don't need to even go that deep. You know, basically, we just need to go 1-5 because that's really the only five that have any kind of realistic shot at even playing for a national title.
I understand. Well, to actually put everything together, I do think it's important because, we've been joking around about this. You know, you still have Washington, Arizona, Kent State, Boise State, Oklahoma State, Louisville, Michigan. Rutgers is still fighting, man. Gotta show some love for them. Rutgers is fighting at 18, UCLA 17, Texas 16, Oregon State 15, Nebraska 14, Oklahoma 13, South Carolina 12. Clemson, Jose, I do apologize. This was last week's BCS. That's only I was just trying to figure out why that didn't make any sense. They have not posted the BCS standing poll for the...
Probably not. All right, but this we can work with this, though, because this is basically the same. It's basically the same. That's why I say let's work with the top five, because it's the top five that's really going to matter. Then.
Okay. Well, Right now, AP Top 25 has been on the money with this. So let's really quickly. Boise State 25, Oklahoma State 24, Texas 23, Northwestern 22. Way to go, Northwestern. Greenies alumni. 21, Michigan, Utah State 20, Northern Illinois, Kent State, UCLA, Oregon State, Clemson dropped to 15. There you go. Nebraska, Florida State, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Texas A&M, LSU, Stanford, Kansas State. Or now, top five, Florida, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame. They have Ohio State there, which we all know Ohio can't be there.
Yeah, Ohio, they can't win a BCS title, but they can still, because of a weird way the rule is, can still be the AP champion. But that's going to be really hard for them to pull off.
That was the AP top 25. The USA Today poll has Notre Dame 1, Alabama 2, Georgia 3, Oregon 4, Florida 5, LSU 6, and so on. South Carolina moved up to 10. Clemson is at 14, and Rutgers at number 25 for their second loss of the year. I guess the question is what to make of all this. You know what I mean? Like, what?
Well,
let's invite Seth Kamens in. Seth can educate me a little bit more on college football. Seth, I watched my first like real full games of college football yesterday. And Jose feels it's like a father watching his son grow up and take those next steps in life. It was one of those things where I watched the Notre Dame game, I watched the South Carolina Clemson game, and what I came out of it was I don't know if Notre Dame is the best team in football, college football. Seth, where are you chiming on this?
Not only is Notre Dame not the best team in college football, Notre Dame is not one of the five best teams in college football. That being said, that's kind of irrelevant. They went undefeated through not a particularly tough schedule because the teams they played in the Big Ten, Michigan State and Michigan, underachieved. They got very lucky to win one double overtime game against Stanford, a triple overtime game against Pittsburgh, which was ridiculous. But winning those games, going to Oklahoma and winning solidly, going to USC and winning solidly, and being the only eligible team for the Bulls that's undefeated, by that, there's no argument that they've earned the right to be in the title game. I think there are seven or eight teams that are better than them. But that's neither here nor there. South Carolina, Clemson, it was actually a pretty good game for a while. The SEC is just extremely tough. I think South Carolina would have been a BCS threat in any conference other than the SEC.
Well, Seth, let me ask you this, because I've always been a prominent believer that, and I agree with you, I don't think Notre Dame is the best team, but I've always been a prominent believer that going undefeated, especially in today's college football, we don't give it as much credence as it probably should be given. So that being said, you know, to the victor goes the spoils. Who would you say, besides the obvious SEC teams, that are better than Notre Dame at this point?
I think Oregon is significantly better than Notre Dame. I think Kansas State would be probably, if healthy, would be better than Notre Dame. Ohio State's kind of an unfair comparison, considering they're not eligible. I would probably take Notre Dame over Ohio State. And then I think you have three or four teams in the SEC that are better. But as I said, being better and being the most deserved team, being the best two best teams, being the best team and being the team most deserved to be in a championship are two completely different things. I don't think Alabama belonged in the national title game last year. I thought they were the best team in the country, but I didn't believe they belonged in the title game because I didn't believe they warranted a rematch after losing at home to LSU. Notre Dame has done what they need to do to win, but there's a significant difference between being the best team in the country and being a team that's warranting a position in the national title game. So I would probably say those two. I think Alabama is better. I don't know if Georgia is better. I think Florida would probably be better, and I think LSU would be better. So I'd have Notre Dame somewhere in the 6-8 range in regards to the best team in the country.
Seth, what did you take out of the Notre Dame-USC game last night as far as the way Notre Dame actually plays, their style play? I've been screaming and yelling at Jose. Not screaming and yelling. Screaming and yelling would be very loud, and I don't do that. I watched the game, and I felt that for a team that controlled the ball in time management, they won that battle. They should have had more points on the board than what they did.
What did you take out of the game? They're not exactly an offensive powerhouse. Everett Golson is a sophomore quarterback who's good, but no one's looking at as special, I don't believe. They have a couple decent running backs, a good tight end. They're a ball control team who's going to score usually between 20 and 30 points a game. If USC couldn't get out of their own way, Lane Kiffin, as usual, it's mind-boggling to me how he's gotten the jobs he has. You know, in LSU, without their Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback, they couldn't get out of their own way. And Notre Dame did what they do. Notre Dame is a very, very, very good defensive team. And what they do is they control the clock, and they don't really let up big plays. They let up 1-2 Marquise Lee late in the game, which led to the goal line stand. But they don't let up big plays. They control the offense. They're very reminiscent. I'm trying to say they're really reminiscent of almost in the pro game as that 90 Giants team, where they run the ball, they play good ball control offense, they can complete a third down pass when they need to, they don't make mistakes. And that's what Brian Kelly's teams have been, both in Cincinnati and Notre Dame, when they've been at their best. They don't make mistakes. And there's a lot to be said for that.
I have two questions to do with Notre Dame. And my first is, do you feel, as I felt, going undefeated, regardless of who was ahead of them, they're in the national championship game? And two, if you had your druthers and, you know, you had to pick the two best teams to play in this national title game, who would it be, regardless of record?
Okay. I don't understand the first question. You're asking me whether I think Notre Dame belongs in Notre Dame in the championship game because they're undefeated.
Do you feel? I've always felt, and I've said this to Randy many a time. If Notre Dame goes undefeated, regardless of who's ahead of them, you know that could also be undefeated. Like let's say there was four teams ahead of them that were undefeated, and we all thought they were much better. But even if Notre Dame goes undefeated, they're in no matter what. They're going to get in the title game because
okay.
just the way the media, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yes and yes and no. I think what would be more practical would be the television network would want them in the national title game. But because of the way the rankings go, I don't think anyone thought a month ago when Notre Dame was number four and Alabama was number one before losing to Texas A&M, before Oregon lost to Stanford and before Kansas State got annihilated by Baylor. Nobody thought Notre Dame was going to end up in the title game. No one. They would not have, because of the way the poll, they would never have been ranked high enough above any of these teams because nobody thinks they're better. To this day, nobody thinks they're better.
Yeah.
So I disagree with you in that regard, but I think that what would happen is that the media would be promoting Notre Dame more because they want Notre Dame in the title game because that brings in ratings. Notre Dame is the New York Yankees, the Duke of college basketball, the whatever you want to call it. They're the cash cow. People watch because they love them. People watch because they hate them. As for your other question, who are the two best teams in the country? It's Alabama and Oregon, period.
That's the way I feel myself.
Yeah, I think that would have been an absolute game for the ages this year. I don't think this is Alabama's best team. I do think this is Oregon's best team. They played a not great game. They just didn't play a great game against a very, very good Stanford team. And that happens. And, you know, every team has a bad game or two, which is a question of getting through it. Notre Dame beat Stanford in double overtime, and they beat Pitt in triple overtime in the game they played. They had vastly outplayed. The one game this year where where Oregon got outplayed, they lost. Alabama got outplayed in two games, one against Texas A&M, one against LSU. They were able to beat LSU. They were not able to beat A&M. Luckily for them, because the SEC is the best conference in college football, they will have a second chance when they play Georgia in the SEC title game. The winner of that will play Notre Dame in the championship. And if Georgia wins, I think Notre Dame has a very legitimate shot to win that game.
I agree with you on that as well.
Seth, do you think there'll be any major changes to the BCS top 25? So far, the polls that have been come out, BCS was still winning on their top 25 list. Any major changes that you think we should be keeping our eye open for?
No, it's right now. It's very simple. Notre Dame will be one because they're the only legitimate undefeated team. Ohio State is undefeated, but because they're ineligible for the bowls, they're not part of this poll. 2 and 3 are going to be Alabama and Georgia, and they play in the SEC title game next Saturday. Now, the way it works is the top four teams in the BCS are automatically part of the BCS games. Most likely, the loser of Alabama, Georgia will move down to 5, and you're going to have Florida at 3 and Oregon at 4, or Oregon at 3 and Florida at 4. It doesn't really make a difference. But at the end of the day, there's nothing left. It's Notre Dame, very simply put, it's Notre Dame versus the winner of Alabama, Georgia, period.
Seth, if I can, because I'm so tired of talking about Notre Dame right now, let's move on to the Big East, because strange things happened this weekend in the Big East, where Rutgers pretty much had a chance to just end all debate, get a BCS bowl bid, and now we're in a situation where we may not even know who's going to be the Big East champion until possibly until Saturday. What's your take on that whole situation?
Well, the take is that the Big East just isn't that good. Rutgers plays Louisville on Thursday, which I will be at. Although I am not an alumni, I will be proudly representing my New Jersey heritage. And if Rutgers wins, they will be in the BCS for the first time. And it gets confusing. I believe there are four teams that are still somewhat eligible. Louisville, I think UConn still has a plays a part. But at the end of the day, most likely, considering the only two ranked teams in the Big East are Rutgers and Louisville, I find it very difficult to imagine any three-way contest. If Rutgers loses, there's like a three- or four-way tie. I don't really know the exacts. But it goes
I believe
to who has the highest rank.
I believe Syracuse actually could get involved in this. I think it's pretty much between Rutgers, Louisville, and Syracuse right now at this point.
I think you're right. And I think if Rutgers wins, then there's no discussion. It's over.
Yeah.
If Louisville wins, and I don't have this in front of me, I think if Louisville and UConn win, and I guess Syracuse wins, then I think there's a three- or four-way tie for the Big East title. And how I believe it's determined is the team with the highest BCS ranking. Now, even though it'll go, they only look at the top 16 in regards to you can only get a bid if you're not automatic if you're in the top 16, I believe. The rankings go further down. My guess would be if Louisville beat Rutgers, that Louisville would have the highest ranking, considering Louisville is the highest ranked team of the BCS team, of the Big East teams right now. I can't imagine being the number two team would bring them further down. So that would be my impression is, yes, there are four teams that are eligible, but the winner of Rutgers Louisville is going to go to the Orange Bowl.
Seth, are you surprised that Stanford, after losing Andrew Luck last year, are having as much success as they are with the 10-2 record?
I think everyone's a little bit surprised. It's very comparable to 15 years ago when Tennessee had Peyton Manning, and he left for the NFL. And then the next year, T. Martin, who was his backup, took over and led the team to a national title. Josh Nunez, and what was so interesting was their quarterback that they brought in was Luck's backup for years. He's been replaced by a freshman. And they've just been very, very good. Stephen Taylor is a borderline All-American running back. Their defense is great. Their tight ends are solid. And most likely they're going to end up in the Rose Bowl against the winner of Wisconsin, Nebraska, which is not really a very appealing game. But
let's hope that's not what happens.
What did you say?
Let's hope that's not what happens because I couldn't stand to watch that game.
It kind of has to be because the Pac-10 still kind of goes. Excuse me, the Rose Bowl still kind of goes Pac-10, Big Ten, if possible.
Are they still tied into that still?
They are. There's a couple reasons. The only reason you're not is if one of the teams is in the national title game. Oregon is not in the national title game. And remember, the only team that's really worthy of a BCS spot in the Big Ten is Ohio State at 12-0, but because of they're ineligible, the top two teams in one of the divisions are them and Penn State, and neither of those teams are eligible. So Nebraska's, I think, 9-3, which Wisconsin's like 7-5. So really, it's a horrible year for the Big Ten in general. Except for, of course, bringing in my beloved Terps. I had to make one comment.
I saw that coming a mile away.
Yeah, well, another team for the Big Ten teams to beat up on, but I'll talk about that on my radio show next week. Stanford is David Shaw is being coach. Stanford is one of the people that the people are thinking about that may end up in the NFL though next year or two. It's just they've really built this. It's not just Andrew Luck. It has become a very, very good football school.
What if I'm sorry, Randy, go.
Go ahead. I was just going to say,
you know, with David Shaw, he has proven to be quite the commodity. What about Chip Kelly, who has also built a powerhouse of sorts in the Pac-12? Do you think he's going to stick around since he's not going to be able to go for a national title this year, or do you think he might jump ship this time around?
I think it'll depend what opportunities are there. I think Oregon right now, except for Alabama, is probably the preeminent college football program. Oh, it has been over the last 5 years. I think he leaves. I think he stayed this year because he thought this team had a chance at the title. They did. It didn't happen. There's going to be a lot. There should be quite a few openings. I'm sure you guys have talked about this a little bit. Most likely, Andy Reid gone Philly, North Turner in San Diego. Rex Ryan is in an interesting place to say the least in Jetsville. Possibly Pat Shurmur in Cleveland. There's probably going to be about five or six openings. And the thought is that if any coach is going to make the jump, it's going to be someone with a creative offensive mind similar to Chip Kelly.
Seth, we were sort of talking with and having this conversation about these teams that have bands on them, like Ohio State and Penn State. When these teams start having these types of success, do they seem to be better stories coming out of it? Like, look, Penn State, I think you and I have had this conversation about the Sandusky, not really wanting to talk about it and to give too much attention to it. But everything that's happened with Penn State, do we consider this a major win season for them, being able to sort of fight through all the bad media press and all the controversy, and this football program getting themselves back on the right page? Same thing with Ohio State and USC that went through their bans over the last couple of years. USC fought through everything. And
I think we're talking about three really different things. First of all, I don't think USC has come through this with class. I think some of the things that happened in the USC program this year, the student manager blowing up, deflating footballs because they didn't want Oregon to have the correct kind of ball, players coming on the same team with the same uniform number. There's something really some. Lane Kiffin, I've talked about this. Lane Kiffin is the luckiest man in America at USC. He was a mediocre offensive coordinator at USC. He gets a job at the Raiders as a head coach. Does nothing there. Becomes a head coach of a stud school at the University of Tennessee. Does nothing there. Becomes a head coach at USC. And is really relatively underachieved. And is immensely disliked around the country, but nobody really thinks he's warranted this. Ohio State is kicking themselves, right? The rumor is with Jim Tressel that there have been a lot of things going on for a long time there. And nobody really cared because it's Ohio State. They care about results. But Ohio State self-imposed a ban this year to avoid ban last year. And what would have been very interesting would have been you would have had, most likely, if they had not imposed their ban last year, would not have gone to the Gator Bowl, but they would probably be in the national title game this year. But see, for the most part, you can never, and this year, what Penn State has done has been extraordinary. Because you take it out on the program, but you can't, for the most part, you can't take it out on the coaches, and you can't take it out on the players. Because the coaches that have been with are gone. Bill O'Brien at Penn State has done an incredible job. The players that are there, you know what? They deserve our respect. 8-4, 7-5, 8-4, 9-3, something like that. It's a fantastic year, considering they started 0-2, and no one really knew what was going to happen. I don't think people were in that big of a rush to see Penn State rebuild that quickly. And I also think you're going to see a lot more with Penn State and USC, especially 2 or 3 years down the line, because what's happening is their number of scholarships has been diminished by 20. So by nature, they're just going to have more problems in 2014, 2015, 2016. But yeah, I very rarely can blame the individual players, and you can't blame the coach they bring in. Bill O'Brien done a wonderful job. It's going to be interesting. Jose had mentioned Chip Kelly and David Shaw. It's going to be interesting. Supposedly, Bill O'Brien is getting some publicity for some professional jobs as well. It'll be interesting to see if he goes.
Well, I'll say this. The thing with Bill O'Brien, though, he has a huge buyout right now, which almost seems unlikely anytime soon. With Penn State, is it just as easy to say that the reason why they were actually very good this year was because the Big Ten was down? Or is this just really a phenomenal coaching job by a guy who added new life to what was a stagnant program?
I think it's a little bit of both. Remember, they did lose. They lost their all. They lost 12 people, including their All-American running back Silas Wright, who went to transfer to USC. They lost their first two games out of conference. First one to Ohio University, the second one to Virginia, who is also an under 500 team in a terrible football conference, the ACC. So, it's you can say that, but by the end of the year, they were a pretty good team. And, you know, yes, the Big Ten, for Big Ten standards, the Big Ten was awful this year. Not missing words. They were terrible. But if you go 9-4, 8-4, considering what they had gone through, yeah, they may not have been the world's strongest 8-4, 9-4 team, but they deserve the accolades that they received.
Seth, you want to tell us what's going to be happening on the Seth and Sean show this upcoming week?
Well, we took last week off, actually, because Sean and I were at a charity event for Hurricane Sandy run by our beloved friend Julie Rutterman. Ironically, we have another one next week on Tuesday as well, although I don't think we're going to go. I believe we're going to have Jared Zwerling, we're trying to get him, the basketball writer for ESPN. We're going to do a little bit of a college basketball preview, talk a little bit of college football. We have a little more of a well-rounded show. As always, 7 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio, feedbacksportspace.com.
And Seth, real quick, let's get predictions for tonight. We know NFL-wise you are a fan. I don't want to use the word fan, but you are a supporter of the New York Giants, Green Bay Packers. This is in our Jose and I have a pick six competition going on right now. We pick six games every week. I have the Giants. He's got the Packers. Where do you stand?
I like the Packers. I think the Giants are going. The Giants have looked. You know, they're coming off a bye. They've obviously been injured pretty bad. They have looked awful in their last two or three games. I think they do look better tonight. I think Eli Manning gets off the schneid because Green Bay's corners are out. It's really a pick 'em game to me. I like Green Bay 31-28, 30-27, something along those lines.
Okay, and real quick, the pick six bet that Jose and I have going on right now. If I lose, I have to take he and his wife out for a love at the place of their choosing. I have to take he and his wife out to a choice of their destination for dinner. We still have to figure out what he's...
Applebee's it is?
I was thinking more of taking him to somewhere that it's, you know, it's a higher end established dining. We were going to all sit in my car and go to Sonic's. And
very nice.
But the thing is, though, so we've established what we're doing for him if he wins. And keep in mind, I have a five-game lead right now, four or five-game lead. But we haven't figured out what he's going to do for me if I win. That's how much confidence he really does have. He's not even picking anything. So with that being said, if for some reason I win here, Seth, what should I have him do?
Buy you a Brooklyn Nets Darren Williams jersey?
No, I was thinking more about him because he's a diehard Knicks fan. I was going to find a way to get him into Madison Square Garden and make him wear Brooklyn Nets gear head to toe and have him hold up a sign saying, "I lost a bet to Randy." Is that going a little too far?
Depends how much money. You want to spend money on the tickets, the MSG, plus all the Brooklyn gear?
Actually, you know what I'd rather have him do? I'd rather have him stand outside Madison Square Garden so we don't have to pay for him to be inside the arena. And we'll have him hold up that sign. Like, listen, don't get me wrong. Jose's very good at paying off his bets. I've seen it. I've seen him pay off his bets. He looks absolutely ridiculous at times doing it, but he's paid off his bets.
You know what's funny, you cheap bastard? You wouldn't even give me a ticket to go to the game? Jerk.
Please, I'm still waiting for my phone bill from 8 months ago.
You're
fortunate.
Well, here's my other idea. Seth, somebody should like this idea for him. He also likes to, Seth, you know the Fairlawn area, sort of. And there's a place there called the Dutch House where Jose likes to spend his time with. As much as he loves the Knicks, he also despises the New York Yankees. What I was thinking about doing is having him sit at his usual seat on Monday night with all of his friends. All of his friends knows how much he hates the Yankees. The other idea is have him sit with a Derek Jeter jersey at the, in his seat in his favorite establishment in front of all of his friends.
Well, you're a cruel, you do have a cruel streak to you.
I think the entertainment value of it would be hysterical.
I guess it's more of what is your preference? You receiving something or his embarrassment?
Because if he wins,
he takes he gets a good dinner out of the deal. If you win, you get to laugh at him, which, if I understand correctly, you do anyway.
Having said that, might have been the worst thing that could have happened to you. He's bringing up such a valid point right now.
Yeah, that's why I was not trying to make any bones about it. I was just letting you go off. But I'll tell you this, Seth. I will be honest with you, though. In all seriousness, it would bother me more to have to wear the jersey at the Dutch House than it would to actually go to a game in Brooklyn Net attire with a sign that said I lost the bet, because at least then everyone knows my fandom. There could be people that come into that bar who don't know me at all, and and could just be like, oh, look, it's another Derek Jeter fan, wearing his Yankee colors off season to begin with. So
it would be opening day, my friend.
He's got to do it for a Yankees Red Sox game.
I know, even better. He's a Mets fan, so you have it on Subway Series Day.
Yeah, that would
now we can be creative out of it.
Yeah, that would bother me to no end. That really would. I might actually have to take a picture with him giving the finger at some point.
At this point, Seth brought up such a valid point about me just laughing at you, which I do all the time. But now that we're getting this detailed with it, I'm sort of more excited about the idea of doing that. Having you sit at the other bar on Yankees Mets weekend, you sitting there wearing a Derek Jeter jersey, and when you're sitting next to your wife giving you a big hug with your head in your hands. I think we're going somewhere. I thought we were healing in the beginning of the show where we said that you and I were, there was a big therapist and they're saying, look, they're finally healing. They're having that moment together. I think we're going back the opposite way, and I think that's fine.
That's what I'm here for.
Seth, you're welcome back on this program anytime you want.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Take care, Seth.
Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Be well.
So, yes, he's welcome here anytime. You, on the other hand...
Well, he's the boss.
What do you mean he's the boss? What do you mean he's the boss? What are you telling him? I'm going to disconnect you. Tune in next Sunday for just the Randy show. That's right. meanwhile, not much has changed in this Niners Saints game. It's now 20-21. San Fran's making big plays, big first downs. This one's going to go down to the wire, so we don't have to pay attention to it. Just turn it on in the fourth quarter.
I will say this. New Orleans is losing players left and right, though. They are getting demolished. Every hit is like a gut-wrench hit, and they're losing guys like it ain't funny.
Okay, well, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Really quick, what Seth was saying about some of the bowl games, I do agree, Notre Dame is not the best team in college football. Let's stop this shenanigans. Okay.
Again, though, like I said earlier, they're definitely not the best team, but they're the team that survived the course. So the reward is a chance to win a national title. So, you can't take that away from them because they were the only team that was able to navigate through the landfill that is the NCAA football season. So we got to give them that. If anything, we have to give them that much.
Okay. We're going to... way now into the NBA, and a couple of different stories going on here. We're going to be here for about 10 minutes with the NBA. Jose, you're a Knicks fan, and I appreciate it. I bust your chops about it, and you bust my chops about being a Knicks fan, so on and so forth. The Knicks win again today. They defeated the Detroit Pistons. We're not saying a high quality opponent in the Pistons. The young team's still growing. One of the things that I had been saying, I don't remember if I said it to you or not, but we were discussing the Knicks at one point, and I bust your chops and on Twitter, and I bust other people's chops because I know I like to get a rise out of people. But they are, I believe, 9-3 at this point.
Yes.
Okay, 9-3. The one thing that was sort of brought to my attention by a couple of different writers was the Knicks had the luxury of those first 7 or 8 games to have a lot of distance between their games. But that's, they're not making the schedule up. They're playing the games. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They struggled this past week down in Texas. They went 1-2 in the Texas swing. They went 2-4 on their 2-3 on their road trip. They lost the game against Dallas, they lost the game against Memphis, and they lost the game against the Houston Rockets. Were there anything in those 3 games that you saw makes you worry at all?
No, and I'm going to tell you why. The only game that I was really and you got to accept that it's going to happen every now and then, was the Houston game. I didn't think the team was really playing with any kind of intensity whatsoever. But again, I think when Chandler Parsons goes 14-17 and is just shooting out of his mind, things like that are going to happen. If Chandler Parsons plays like he normally plays, maybe that game doesn't get out of hand. And maybe we're talking a different scenario. The Dallas game, they didn't come with intensity on defense, but they were, they had a chance to win that game. So I've liked what I've seen. There's nothing about the team that I've seen right now in the first 12 games that leads me to believe that there is anything of significance that we should take from what's happened. What I think it comes down to, and I think this is a fair assessment to make, is that people who may not necessarily like the team will look for any any kind of wrongdoing that happens to say, oh, you see, this is what we were talking about. And I think people are now grasping for straws. And maybe we should just accept the fact that, maybe this team is not as bad as we thought they were going to be. So that's my take on the situation. What happened?
It's a possibility. Here's where my concern was. I listen to a little bit more sports radio around here. I follow the Knicks very carefully. I follow the Nets very carefully. I follow the whole league very carefully. Carmelo Anthony has played very well for this streak. And he is a marquee player in the NBA. I think he's one of the top 15 players in the league. I'm not saying he's number 15. Okay, I'm not telling you where in the top 15 I'm putting him. But I'm saying he's not the face of the league. That's what I'm trying to say. He's been making comments about the referee calls and how he's not getting this, he's not getting that. Does he deserve some better treatment from the referees? Yeah, if he's not getting a call, then somebody on the other team can't get the call unless they're above him. You can't give lower-level guys the calls that you're not giving Carmelo Anthony.
I agree with that to a point. I've never bought into that whole thing. To me, if the call needs to be made, the call needs to be made. I don't care if you're the worst player in the league or the best. I've always been bothered by that. I know that that's the way it happens, but I don't like it. And I think that's something that we really need to work on.
I agree with you on that. But, again, here's my problem with what Anthony's doing. Don't speak out about it. All right? I usually call that the Phil Jackson. But mode of operation.
And what's the role for him, though?
There's a difference between a player doing it and a coach doing it. When a coach does it, he's trying to gain the attention of the officials for future games. When a player does it, it comes almost off like complaining.
But isn't this what Kevin Garnett does on an everyday basis?
I hate the officiating in the NBA at times because of the lack of consistency. I don't think you should be giving superstars calls at all. I've seen going back to Jordan, you know, Jordan, LeBron James, all the players, all the marquee names through the years have gotten these calls that should never have been calls, or they're not calling it both sides. I honestly feel that they should just be be right down the middle. If Allen Iverson is carrying the ball or because he palms the ball, then call palming. Don't do because, well, that's Allen Iverson. That's what he does. That doesn't work for me. That doesn't work for you either. I know you well enough to know that doesn't work for you either.
Yeah, you're right on that.
Let me just say this.
I read a study a few years ago, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I read a study a few years ago that they had players wear masks, and the referees had to call the game, not knowing who the player was. And there were players, and these are like really good athletes, and these were players that were really good. I don't have it in front of me right now, but these were players that are now in the NBA. Like back then they were college, so they were really good college players. The referees ref the game with the players wearing masks, and then they ref the game with the players with their faces exposed. And did you realize that the top four players in the game, that when they ref the game with them wearing masks, actually had more calls on them than when they went unmaskless, doing the exact same game, playing the game the exact same way the game was played the first time around? So this really does bear to mind that this is the kind of reason why people think the NBA is rigged. And, you know, not to be the dead horse, but it's stuff like this that makes people say, my God, you know, what the hell?
Real quick, I want to quickly go over the scoreboard from this afternoon. Sundays usually is a matinee day in the NBA. Philly on above Phoenix right now, 46-41. I want to bring up the Phoenix Suns to you in a second. Boston in Orlando, that game's at the half, by the way. As halftime in Orlando, Boston up 58-48. Final in two overtimes, the San Antonio Spurs over the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors have been playing everybody tough. They just can't get over the hump. They're missing that star to close that game for them. 111-106, we just talked about it before. The Knicks 121 over Detroit. 100. Brooklyn defeats Portland 98-85, and the one late game tonight, 8 p.m. on ESPN, the Hornets visit the Denver Nuggets. Real quick, before I jump into the Phoenix, something I wanted to just bring up to you. Headlines around the league, the 23-year-old daughter of Rockets head coach Kevin McHale dies on November 11th. He took a leave of absence from the team. I'm assuming it had something to do with this. Hearts and, you know, prayers and our hearts go out to Kevin McHale. Nobody deserves that, losing their daughter at that age. I guess this was something that's been going on. Nobody knows the reasoning of the death. No one's going to speculate. We just want to, you know, send our, you know, best wishes to the Rockets and Kevin McHale. Other quick notes around the NBA. Philadelphia 76ers declare Andrew Bynum out indefinitely with his knees. If he really re-aggravated his knees bowling, this is a disgrace. Bynum seemed like he was a headache in L.A., and now the East Coast is going to get a taste of what kind of headache and a distraction he really is. Jose, before I jump in with the rest of the news, your opinions on both the Bynum story and the McHale story.
Real quick on the McHale story, I just, you know, again, we all feel bad about the situation, and I hope this doesn't become a witch hunt by, you know, ongoing reporters trying to find out what happened. Let's just let a family situation be handled within the family and not try to find out any more information that we don't need to know about. As far as the Bynum thing goes, you know, it's funny. I remember not that long ago when Bynum was eligible to be drafted, a lot of people thought the Knicks should have drafted this guy. And this was during a time when the Knicks were not really that stable of an organization. Not that they're that much stable now, but Bynum has been an odd duck since he's been in the NBA. I will say this, though. He has a life, and he obviously has the right to do what he wants to do as long as it's within the confines of his contract. Now, if he got hurt bowling, you got to know, if you're trying to recover from an injury, you shouldn't be doing anything that could cause any kind of stress to your body. You and me both bowl. You know that there's, you know, it's probably not something you should be doing to recovering from any kind of injury. But, again, as long as he was following the rules of his contract, I'm not so, like, you know, I'm not going to go crazy on buying him. I will just say this. if you know you're injured, and he obviously is, and you know you should be recuperating, you probably shouldn't be doing anything that leads to any kind of stress on your legs or on your knees. And I'm just hoping that this is actually what happened, and if we don't find out later on, he was, doing water rafting, and that's how he hurt his legs again. Because, that's what this always ends up coming out to be. Oh, he decided to play basketball, and that's how he got hurt. Because, when I first heard the bowling thing, I'm like, yeah, he's lying about that. I'll be honest with you.
Really quick, we can jump in the bottom a little bit more next week when we have a little bit more time with us.
By the way, I love his hair.
I'm not going there. The Dallas Mavericks, executive Michael Finley wants to try and get back into the league. I think this is a mistake. I think he should stay retired. There's not really a place for a player his age. Well, Jason Kidd's older than him, but Finley was a mid-to-good player when he was in his prime. I don't think right now he can really help a team. I think he should stay retired. That's just my feeling. Steve Nash is out for a little while longer. He's not ready to jog or even get on the court. Nets center Reggie Evans is the first player fined for flopping this week. $5,000 for flopping. You and I have gone over this whole flopping thing. We both think it's a joke and it's ridiculous. I'm glad they're trying to crack down on it, but I think they're watching the wrong people. I think you have to watch some of the players who are managed by the people at CAA. Those are the people who need to get their eye, keep an eye on. And
what I believe is that a guy like Reggie Evans, who's one of the tough guys in the NBA, is the guy that actually gets nailed for flopping first. I mean, that's more of the shock to me. I don't think Reggie Evans, if he's going down, I don't think he's flopping. I mean, I didn't see the call that happened.
I saw it this week. We watched the game against, I'm trying to remember if it was Golden State and Brooklyn. It was either Golden State or it was the Lakers. No, I think it was the Laker game. It was the Laker game because he was up against Pau Gasol, and Pau barely touched him, and Reggie fell to the floor. It was one of the funniest things. This is a fine that's deserved to be given. And I'm not shocked at all with this. We're already behind a little bit. I just wanted to real quick touch on the Phoenix Suns thing. For a team that has lost so much talent over the last three off seasons, the team is starting to click. And I like the Phoenix Suns. I've always been we've always said if you're a fan of a team, you're a fan of a team. That's it. You can't have a second team in the sport. But you're allowed to follow some other teams just to see what you're doing. And I don't want to say root for them, but you know what I mean. You know where I'm going with this. You're a Knicks fan, but you keep an eye on some of the other teams and what they're doing. And we've always had a little bit of love for the Phoenix Suns. And Phoenix is starting to put some nice games together. They started off the season 3-7. They're 3-6. They've won two of their last three. They're 6-7. They're two games back. I know it's hard for me to say two games back because it's so early in the season, but they're turning into a nice little team. They have Mike Beasley over there who's playing well, Dragic who's playing very well, Jared Dudley. They have some nice pieces on that team, and they can fight for a lower playoff seat. You and I had a conversation last week on the air about where the Denver Nuggets were. This week, they're now 7-6 and second in that division. it's this constant early season. We know that Indiana is going to be there towards the end once everybody's healthy, and they'll be they're 6-8 right now. Milwaukee's leading that division. Milwaukee won't be there in the Central when we get towards the end of the year. So that's what I'm trying to say. I know it's early, but I'm trying to watch all these teams and see who has something going on and who's going to be able to be there towards the end. Do I think the Houston Rockets are going to be there at the end? I don't think so. Really quick, we have to do what we learned this week. Jose, what did you learn this week in the week of sports?
Well, I learned a couple of things. One was that no matter what, we're always going to get tied down to bad college football games every now and then and be forced to watch bad championship games just because it's the way the system's set up. That's one. The thing I'm actually more impressed of, and I couldn't believe it until I saw it just now, the Charlotte Bobcats are 7-5. I actually had to double check that. They've actually already won more games this year than they did all of last year. And kudos to that team. I have no idea who's coaching that team right now. I don't even know if Michael Jordan is still involved with that team, because that was the only thing that made me think, wow, they're winning because he's gone. I have no idea. But in all seriousness, kudos to the Bobcats. I kind of like the team they got right now. I'm not glowing over it, but I like, they're starting to get a nucleus there. Randy, if you could, is it Mike Dunlap that's coaching the team now as I look this up? Who the hell's Mike Dunlap? I mean, I have no idea who that is, but
he was a Division One coach.
Okay.
Division One coach last year. Listen, I think the thinking of Jordan here was this, and let me know if you agree with this theory. He has a bunch of young guys. They have a couple of veterans like Ben Gordon who can still score on this team. But he has a bunch of young guys who are 19, 20, 21. Why not bring in a college coach who's worked with that age? To be able to get the points out, get the point out to them and help them grow. I think it's a brilliant move. I think they can compete for a lower level playoff spot. A lot of us had picked the Washington Wizards to compete, and they're 0-11. So I just don't know what's going on there. But I think the Bobcats are in the right track. Real quick, what I learned this week, I learned three very, very important things. One in football and two in the NBA. The two in the NBA, one, Danny Ferry is a very, very, very good general manager. If you would have told me after the first month of the season, after the moves the Atlanta Hawks made, they were headed into rebuild mode, that they would have won 5 in a row and their 8-4 record and a game and a half behind Miami in the Southeast Division, I would have said that's not going to happen. But you lose Joe Johnson, Marvin Williams, and you pick up a bunch of spare parts, as I like to call them, guys like Kyle Korver, Devin Harris. And we were talking about Devin Harris as an all-star 2 years ago. Atlanta still has Josh Smith, who is going to be leaving Atlanta at the end of the season, by the end of the season, or even by the deadline, and Al Horford. Atlanta still has some weapons, and they still have some fight in them, and they've won 5 in a row. They're not done by any means. That's the first thing I've learned in the NBA. Second thing I learned in the NBA is that I learned a couple different teams are regular season teams, and there's some teams that are playoff teams. The Knicks are built for the playoffs. Brooklyn is not built for the playoffs. You and I have had this conversation multiple times, but now I'm seeing from some other teams. I'm starting to believe, and I think you agree with me, the San Antonio Spurs are built for the regular season. They're not built for the playoffs anymore. This team has constantly let everybody down during the playoffs. A couple years ago, they were the number one seed, and they lost to Memphis in round one. Last year, they had a 2-0 lead in the conference finals and fell to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Is the window closed for San Antonio? That really comes to question. And I'm beginning to lean to put San Antonio in that regular season bracket instead of playoff bracket. Memphis right now is the wild card team in that division. See where they're going to end up. I don't know how you feel about the Spurs-Memphis debate. If you want me to, I can go. The other thing that I learned this week, or we can discuss this. Do you want to stay on this for a minute?
Yeah, I'm not so sure I necessarily buy that San Antonio thing. I actually think San Antonio is one of those teams that's actually built for the playoffs. I mean, have you seen the way how Greg Popovich has coached his team throughout the last couple of years? I mean, there's games where he just sits Duncan, just to give him rest. They sit Parker, they sit Ginobili. I'm not so sure I buy that. I think this is a team that's still going to be a tough out. They lost to OKC last year. That team was destined to make the finals. I think we all knew it. I mean, I don't think there was anyone that doubted that. So, to me, you have to have a real bad year and then come back again before we start questioning whether or not you're built for the regular season or not. I've always felt that if we're going to start making, these coronations on teams, they have to have fallen. This Spurs team has never really fallen. First round exits happen every now and then. They happen a lot, But I need to be not even in the playoffs before I'm going to make remarks like that. I guess is what my train of thought would be.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And, listen, I look around the league. Chicago 6-6. you know, Miami's 10-3, Atlanta 8-4, Charlotte 7-5, New York, Brooklyn. Listen, the only team in the Atlantic that doesn't have more than they're not above 500 is Toronto. But Boston 7-6, Philly 7-6, Brooklyn 8-4, and the Knicks 9-3. That's a very competitive division. In the West, Oklahoma City is 10-4. They're the class of that division. Everybody else is bordering the 500 area, including Minnesota, Portland, Utah, Denver. The Clippers, the Pacific division is going to be up in the air. If I was going to tell you that in the first 15 games or 14 or 15 games, Golden State would be 8-6 and second in that division, would you believe me?
To be fair, though, I actually did think Golden State might actually do something this year. I don't know why. I just thought maybe it was time.
They might have believed you. Real quick, the other thing that I learned this week, and then we have to move on. No matter, I think now with their post-game press conferences and their press conferences during the week, I think that Rex Ryan and the New York Jets are now trying to convince themselves that they actually have a good team and that they should be, you know, better than what they are. I'm that game on Thursday night was an embarrassment to football. And I really do think that if Woody Johnson said he didn't sign up for this, when your owner comes out and says you didn't sign up for this, there's going to be some wholesale changes going on. I'm trying to figure out whether Mark Sanchez should be, if the problem is Sanchez, if the problem is Tebow, if the problem is the players they already have on the field, is it the coach, is it the general manager? But the Jets, I learned this week that the Jets are an absolute disgrace. But you and I both felt last week that they probably were going to lose against St. Louis, and they surprised both of us by actually winning. But, man, if there's one team that's a disaster, like Kansas City, I think, is a better overall team than the Jets at this point. I want to know how you feel about that.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again? I'm sorry, I kind of lost track of you for a second.
No problem. I learned this week that the Jets are a disaster, and I think that Rex Ryan is trying to convince himself and the audience that the Jets are a better team than what they really, really, really are.
Yeah, well, that would take the skill of a magician at this point. So, look, I'll give them this much. When you lose your two best players, you can't really expect much when you basically build both sides of the ball on these two guys. Losing Darrell Revis was a big blow. I mean, we can both agree on that. Losing Antonio Holmes to a point was a blow because he was a big part of the offense. He wasn't a great player, but he was a player that has, you know, won an MVP at the Super Bowl and has been a solid. But I think we all realize that when Revis went down, I think the whole season went down.
I agree. Now, we have to switch gears. We only have 8 minutes left. We still have a lot of work to do here. What to watch for this week? What two or three games or situations are you looking forward to this upcoming week in the sports world?
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to this Net basketball game tomorrow, which we'll finally get to see. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward, actually, to see the outcomes of conference bowl games. One in particular, I'm looking forward to seeing Rutgers-Louisville to see who wins the Big East, if that could get determined this weekend. And, of course, UCLA versus Stanford in the Pac-12 conference title game, and then Alabama-Georgia to see who's going to play Notre Dame and destroy them. So, basically, those are the those games in particular. I think we're the next one there for you. Those are the things I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Okay, for me, I too am looking forward to the Nets-Brooklyn game. The Nets-Knicks game. It's going to be interesting. I've sort of distanced myself a little bit from the Nets over the last couple of seasons as far as, my personal feelings. Listen, that's going to be a good game. The atmosphere is going to be high. I still think Brooklyn has the fan base to take over the city. I know they're trying to take over the city, quote-unquote. I'm not buying it. But what I'm also looking forward to this week, really looking forward to that, even though if New Orleans doesn't make something happen here in the last 4 minutes, they're going to lose 31-21. I'm sort of looking forward to seeing the Atlanta-New Orleans game on Thursday night. I think that's going to be a great test for the Falcons. And I think that's going to be a very, very, very fun game to watch. And the last thing I'm sort of looking forward to is, like you said, a little while ago before we went on the air, was the Miami Heat-Brooklyn Nets game. I'd like to see what round two looks like. LeBron, Wade, and Bosh coming to Brooklyn is almost like a what-could-have-been scenario from 2010. I think it's otherwise on the NBA schedule, there's not much really going on. I'm also looking forward to seeing what Rex has to say this week at the circus. So that's what I got. Before we jump into Sound Off, we need our sports law this week. That's the one thing we really didn't discuss about was sports law. I know we're trying to cram a lot in here. Are you okay, Jose? And this is for women to join in the sports conversations, like serious sports talk, like what we're doing now. Are you welcome to it?
I'm always welcome to it as long as they know what they're talking about. One of the things that always bothers me is when anyone starts talking about stuff when it comes to sports and they have no idea what they're talking about, or they bring in information that's not legitimate, or just have no real basis for saying what they're saying. So I'm always all for anyone getting involved in the conversation as long as they know what they're talking about.
Okay. That's fine. And Sound Off. Okay, so we're okay with women in sports.
yeah. We're all about equality. We got the pardon.
Okay. We're about, that might have been the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard you say. I just want to go on record saying I now feel dumber. I feel that was 30 seconds of my life that I'm never getting back again. Thank you, and I hope you have a horrible evening.
Yeah.
With that being said, Sound Off, what do you got, bud?
Well, you know what? I've been pretty, calm this week. I do want to – I'm just going to say this. I don't know if you noticed how Baltimore was able to tie their game up against San Diego today. Well, if you get a chance, watch the play. Let me just say it involves fourth down and 29, okay? This is the reason why no one has any faith in San Diego as a football team. They have a horrible coach, a guy who should be a coordinator, not a head coach. Obviously, he's not the one out there having to make the tackles, but it just gets to the point, why are you even getting put in that situation? It's fourth and 29. If you can't stop a fourth and 29, I mean, you should just be fired right on the spot. I would not be surprised if San Diego does fire North Turner if they lose this game, because that is an embarrassment. Again, if you have not seen it and we've been doing the show, I just saw how they tied the game up. Randy, you would go livid. You would literally, if you were a San Diego fan or had any stake in that game, you would have went out of your way to fire North Turner and just punch him in the face just because it needs to stop. I don't know what else to say. San Diego is the Dallas Cowboys of the West. That is the nastiest thing I can say other than saying Rachel Ray is a nice person.
Just to add with that, North Turner reminds me of the guy from Boardwalk Empire. During this season, Nookie's brother gets out of jail, and the guy.
Oh God.
Yeah, and he looks at me. He's like, How are you still alive? He's like, I just learned how to get around. That's North Turner. my little sound off this week has to do with the officiating during the Houston-Detroit game on Thanksgiving Day. The referees have to know when to take a stand, and the best comment I heard was from the guy who's on the NFL. I forgot his name. The guy who's on the NFL who does the rule officiating. That they should have the power to be able to challenge a play when they know it's that obvious. And I think you agree with me. That was the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen in football. When a guy's arm and leg are down, but they can't even do a review upstairs because a challenge flag was already thrown illegally. Come on, guys. Really? Really? The refs have to grow a set and take it back and make things happen.
I totally agree with you. Unfortunately, it is a rule. They put it in place because they didn't want anyone trying to do anything sneaky, but I agree with you. I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, Jim Schwartz, what are you doing? You know the play's going to get reviewed anyway. It was a scoring play. So he obviously had a brain cramp, but you're right. that's a situation where they need to kind of get rid of that rule. I think that's a horrible thing that happened in Detroit, and I don't know what else to say. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I'll put it like that.
By the way, it looks like you. I will be the one if all this stands up. You're going to have a game. You're going to make up a game today because it looks like the 49ers are going to defeat the New Orleans Saints in our pick six. I was trying to go with the hot hand because New Orleans has been playing really well, but I guess it was not meant to be this week. Jose, we're pretty much out of time. We're done.
Nice. Now I can get to go eat dinner now.
Yeah, me too. All right, bud. See you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. By the way, tomorrow, sorry, if you're in the New Jersey, New York area, Wallington Lanes, Michael Boley from the New York Giants, his charity event to help the fight against autism. Come on out, support a good cause. All the information on lunarsportsgroup.com. All right, guys, have a great week. We'll see you next week. Randy Zellier for Jose Padilla. We're out of here. Peace, we're out of here.
Take it deep.